Welcome to the Chilean Sea Blob Podcast. In each episode, I'll share a previously published short fiction written by me, Theodore Carter. The stories will slither in and out of genre distinctions, but will consistently stay weird. Now, let's get started with today's story. Little Miss Strange. Brad nodded toward the corner booth. I turned to look, and Little Miss Strange glowered at me through the hazy light. Her devilish green-yellow eyes narrowed to slits. I quickly turned away, embarrassed, and hit Brad on the shoulder, hoping that she would know my staring had been Brad's fault. Brad laughed. Jesus, LM, what the fuck? Brad was a whiz with nicknames. LM was short for Lil Mike, a name he'd derived by combining his affinity for hip-hop, my skinny frame, and my name, Mike. Brad loved it, even after I pointed out that nicknames should reduce the number of syllables. He'd come up with Little Miss Strange, too, from the Hendrix song, for the skinny, wild-haired, black-clad blonde who camped out in the corner booth of the bar across from our Connecticut Avenue office. A few days after he'd christened her, she wore a black Hendrix t-shirt. Brad nearly went apeshit with delight. A week later, she wore a 50 Cent shirt. Brad didn't comment, but I found it difficult to reconcile. Brad chuckled and said, "What are you so pissed off about anyway, LM?" He undid the top button of his baby blue dress shirt, took a swig of his Corona, and motioned to the bartender for another. Most of what I knew about Miss Strange I'd gathered through side glances while walking past her to the bathroom, or from Brad's observations gleaned from his walks to the pisser. It was hard to get a good look at her in the dim recesses of the bar. Sometimes she appeared young, in her early 20s, like me. Other times, I'd peer beneath her wild mop of hair and see deep wrinkles along the sides of her mouth, crow's feet around her eyes. Her long, thin nose cast a narrow shadow across her face. She wore a barrage of metallic bracelets, which spiraled up her forearms like armor. Her clothes, though they changed with the season, were always black. Of course, I never admitted it to Brad, but I thought she exuded sex. I looked at my watch. 7 o'clock. I wanted to leave soon, before the happy hour crowd turned into the Friday night crowd, and I ended up out for the evening with Brad. I had to pee first, though, and I'd need to pass Miss Strange to get to the bathroom. Upon my return, Brad would want a full report about what I saw when I'd pass her. He might even order another round. Still, I had to go. "Brad," I said, "I've got to go to the pisser." He didn't even realize I was mocking him. A waitress stood in the aisle and served as a shield, allowing me an inconspicuous glance as I slipped past Miss Strange's booth. She was looking down at a book on her table. Her hair covered her face, but I noticed her hands, black nail polish, thumb rings. I emerged from the restroom, stepped into the bar, and stood for a moment. People in jeans, rolled up sleeves, and unbuttoned collars packed the room. Happy hour was over. I looked at the back of Miss Strange's head and noticed red streaks in her blonde hair. Already, I decided not to look at her as I passed. My coordination had deteriorated, and I needed to focus on weaving through the crowd. Also, I was scared of her. I looked for Brad's head jutting out from the crowd, but didn't see him. Walking toward the bar, I heard a voice behind me. "Your buddy's gone." I turned around, her eyes locked on mine. Neither Brad or I had ever talked to her before. "Excuse me? Your buddy. He started talking to this cheerleader type and left with her and her friends." She chewed gum. I heard it pop against her teeth. She moved her jaw slowly from side to side like she was working tobacco. Her thin nose matched her angular cheekbones and pointed chin. I guess she was probably my age, maybe a little older, though delicate wrinkles trickled from the corners of her mouth and eyes. Maybe she was a smoker. It would explain her gravelly voice. "Oh, thanks," I said. My stomach turned sour. I began to sweat. I thought about what it would be like to undress her. I turned to leave. "Why do you hang out with him anyway?" she said. I turned back toward her. "He's a coworker. We go for drinks sometimes." "He's an asshole," she said. "You don't know him," I said. It had come out wrong. I'd spoken out of surprise, but it sounded like I was defending him. "Sorry," she said. Her eyes softened, and she looked down at her hands. Then she said, "Is he an asshole?" Yeah, he kind of is. I smiled. I forced a smile because I was still scared of her. The sleek contours of her neck moved gracefully into her black t-shirt. Gotta get through here, someone yelled. I turned to see an aggravated waitress behind me carrying a tray of beers. I leaned my rump into the booth seat opposite Miss Strange so the waitress could get past. Miss Strange stood, reached out, and gently pulled me down by the sleeve of my casual Friday polo shirt. Sit down, she said. I looked at her across the table. Brad would never believe it, but I was already thinking I'd never tell Brad. What's your name? She asked. A book lay face down on the tabletop. It took me a minute to read the title upside down, but it was a biography of Billy the Kid. Mike, I said. She replied with, huh, but didn't offer her own name, so I asked her. What do you call me? She asked. I'm sorry, I said. Momentarily, I believed Miss Strange possessed psychic powers. You come in here every couple weeks. Your buddy stares at me like an idiot. You give sideways glances, and then you whisper. I assume you have a revolting nickname for me. Because she already seemed to know about it, I felt okay telling her. Little Miss Strange, I said, like the Hendrix song. Brad, he's the one who thought of it. That's Noel Redding's song, though it's Hendrix on guitar. I grunted in affirmation, but I had nothing to say in return. She took a sip of water, then said, Hendrix, he's another lefty. What? I said. He was left-handed, she said. So was Billy the Kid. She pointed to her book with a ballpoint pen hooked in her left hand, both outlaws. I gave her a quizzical look. I've got one down where I intentionally skew my eyebrows to invite further explanation. This launched her into a soliloquy on famous left-handers: Leonardo da Vinci, H.G. Wells, Bill Clinton, Julius Caesar, Joan of Arc, Mark Twain, Paul Klee, and Babe Ruth. To her, their handedness had led to their success. Being right-handed, I'd never paid much attention to lefties, but she spoke with such gusto, gesticulating with her slender arms, smiling, her eyes growing wide, that I believed maybe lefties were extraordinary. She recounted dates of ancient battles and ERAs of Cy Young Award winners. She must have gone to college. I pictured her in black sweats, curled up like a snake in a chair near the back of a university lecture hall. Sometimes I asked questions, but the conversation never settled on either one of us. We discussed Napoleon's leadership qualities and how perhaps his arrogance was an asset. This led to a discussion of the cocky, talented, and left-handed Ty Cobb. From there, we talked about Cary Grant. She didn't wait for segues, but instead spilled information as if it were of vital importance. Miss Strange sipped water, and I, feeling pressure from the wait staff, ordered beers. When I checked my watch, it was nearly 11. I'd been drinking slowly since 5:30. I started thinking again of an exit strategy. I wanted Miss Strange to come home with me, but I didn't know how to broach the subject. There was never a break in the conversation. Plus, I didn't know her name. She preempted me. Let's get out of here, she said, and she gave me a sultry look, which surprised me because our conversation had never gotten flirtatious. Then she stood up. I paid my tab at the bar while she stood by the door, gripping her Billy the Kid biography, her intense eyes peering past the crowd like she was somewhere else. We headed up Connecticut Avenue toward R Street. I worked hard to walk straight and to enunciate clearly. She talked about H.G. Wells, a real visionary who wrote about rockets and time travel a half century before the right-handed Ray Bradbury. The brisk November night helped sober me. I wanted to know where we're going, but I stayed silent and followed. She moved her pale, slender, bare arms as she talked. It must have been below 50 degrees, but she didn't have a jacket. She glided over the sidewalk in eerie grace, and though I peered at her face, I could still not see her clearly. She seemed to dispel the street lamp's light. Finally, I said, where are we going? My place, she said. We turned down a narrow street of brick sidewalks packed with parked cars and dimly lit townhouses. A fog rolled through the city, uncharacteristic for that time of night. She didn't say anything about it, and we moved through like we were wading across a river. I wanted to ask her name, but started to wonder if maybe she'd already said it. Maybe I'd forgotten. I couldn't very well ask her now. Still, I knew I might sleep with her, and I wasn't the kind of guy who slept with a girl without knowing her name. In fact, I'd only slept with one other girl before. Her name was Elizabeth. We arrived at her townhouse somewhere northeast of DuPont Circle. I hadn't paid attention to how we'd gotten there. I followed her up the front steps. "My roommates are all out," she said, and she unlocked the iron gate in front of the door. Inside, the house smelled like dust. There were no shoes by the door, no magazines about, no dirty dishes, no evidence of roommates. She led me into the living room and over to a black leather couch. I sat. She went into the kitchen. Stacks of unpacked boxes cast long shadows around the room. She came back and handed me a glass of water. "Sorry about the boxes," she said. "I just moved in." I nodded and took a sip, but I knew Brad and I had been watching her for months. Another look at the boxes showed some were stained on the bottom. A green liquid leaked out of the corner of one and pooled on the rug. Miss Strange sat side saddle on the couch beside me. Her skirt rode high, and she gently stroked her calf with the fingertip of her left hand. Despite my alcohol intake, I felt an erection growing. She smiled. Her eyes looked more cat-like than they had at the bar. She leaned in to kiss me, and I knew this was my one chance. She wouldn't like me tomorrow. I was too ordinary. She gripped my shoulder. Her nails dug into my skin through my shirt. She stopped, her face inches from mine, and I could feel her breath warm on my cheek. Too warm, like steam. She smelled slightly rotten. She licked my lips with her tongue. Suddenly, I became dizzy. Her face appeared to be swaying from side to side. The last thing I remember was looking at my water glass and thinking it had to be the explanation. Something was in the water. I silently scolded myself for coming home with her, then closed my eyes. In the darkness, I heard Miss Strange say, "Let me come in, Mike." A hard rain woke me. She'd deposited me on Connecticut Avenue right in front of the bar we'd left the night before. I righted myself by leaning against the building. My watch said 7:45, and the sun fought its way through the gray clouds. The sporadic Saturday morning traffic whizzed past on wet asphalt. Drenched, I walked south toward the metro. I tried hard to remember what had happened, but only recalled passing out on Miss Strange's couch. I had a dream, too. Miss Strange had tied me to a chair in a wood-paneled parlor, cut off my right hand while laughing demonically, and then slurped the blood out of it. When done, she'd tossed my severed hand over her shoulder. I'd screamed and begged, but she'd insisted it was for the best. Trying to remember more only hurt my head, and I thought again about my glass of water. When I got to the turnstile, I pulled out my wallet. Usually, I whipped out my fare card with one hand. This day, I wasn't so dexterous and needed two. On the station platform, white and blue-collar workers looked fresh and clean-clothed, ready for a Saturday job. A couple dirty, mussy-haired types sat slumped on benches, including a green-hued young woman with a stain on the shoulder of her black jacket. I probably looked as bad. When the train came, I hunkered down in the back row of the last car. Closing my eyes helped my headache. I held my hands in my lap, and feeling queasy, I loosened my belt. I did this with my left hand and silently congratulated myself for suddenly regaining coordination. When I got off the train, I took out my fare card with one hand, my left again. As I walked from the courthouse metro station to my apartment, I started testing the abilities of my right hand versus those of my left. I tried snapping. The noise echoed in my left hand, but was barely perceptible with my right. I wrote my name in the air. Seemed okay with both hands. I dropped a penny and pretended to, unthinkingly, pick it up. I used my right hand and felt relieved. By the time I got within a block of my house, though, I was walking so fast I was almost running. I needed a pen and paper. It was ridiculous, I knew. Yet, no matter how many tests I devised for myself, nothing convinced me I was still right-handed. I dropped the key, trying to push it into the lock, then picked it up and turned it with my left hand. I scampered over to the phone, where I kept a pen and notepad. "Mike Jeffries, Mike Jeffries," I printed over and over with my right, but each time it came out shaky and upwardly slanted. Cursive was impossible. Reluctantly, I switched to my left hand and in perfect script wrote, "Mike Jeffries is right-handed." Monday, I went to the office late. Big Brad lumbered toward me, holding a cup of coffee. "Dude, sorry about Friday, little Mike. I just..." "Fuck off, Brad," I said, and I shoved him with my left hand. His coffee spilled on his white dress shirt. "Dude," he said. I sat stewing at my desk for 7 hours and left at 4:30 to find Miss Strange at the bar. The place was nearly empty. The bartender leaned against the cash register and watched me pass. I sat in Miss Strange's booth. The waitress came. "What can I get you?" "Water," I said. She tapped her pen against her notepad. "You waiting for someone then?" she asked. "Yeah," I said. She left reluctantly. Miss Strange came through the door and flipped her sunglasses up so that they rested on her untamed hair. In her left hand, she carried the Billy the Kid book. She saw me, smiled fiendishly, then walked toward me with a seductive, hippie swagger. I looked daggers at her, but watching her move, the way she floated toward me, I was seduced all over again. My nasty look faded the closer she came, and by the time she sat, I didn't know what to say. She leaned across the table and whispered, "It's better, isn't it?" "What did you do to me?" I said. The bite I'd been looking for was in my voice. "Things are different now, right? They're better. More clear?" "It's not natural. I mean, how did you..." She couldn't stop smirking. "Look at this," she said, and she slapped her book on the table, pushed it toward me so that it was upside down. "The Gunsmoke," she said. On the cover was an illustration of Billy crouched and firing his pistol. Gunsmoke whirled above him. I remembered it from our last meeting, but this time when I looked at it, I saw the portrait of Billy repeated within the gray wisps of the smoke. "You see it?" "Yeah," I said. "Didn't see it Friday, did you? Your right brain is working now." I started to understand. Sunday, I'd laid in bed all day thinking, like my body needed to relearn everything. By the afternoon, I'd felt more comfortable than I ever had before. "You drugged me. You took me home and you drugged me," I said. She giggled. "You needed it." She handed me 2 quarters. "Pick something," she said, nodding to the jukebox. I gave her a hard look. I wanted to be angry, but I was more curious than anything. "Go," she said. Reluctantly, I went over to the jukebox and flipped through the pages. Someone had handwritten a small L next to certain songs. Joan Jett, I Love Rock and Roll, L. Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit, L. Dick Dale, Miserlou, L. Jimi Hendrix, Purple Haze, L. I knew she'd done it, that somehow she'd gotten behind that big glass bubble to denote all the famous left-handers. It had impressed me. Using my left hand, I dropped 50 cents into the jukebox. Jimi Hendrix started up. I walked back to my booth, sat, and smiled at Miss Strange. The song sounded better than I'd remembered. Miss Strange gave me a knowing nod. "That's what I mean," she said. The waitress came by. "What can I get you?" I looked at Miss Strange. She shook her head. "Nothing," I said. "We're fine." She set her hips off kilter and gave a bounce. "Look, you're going to have to order something." "Bring me that bowl of peanuts sitting on the bar," I said. Her eyes grew wide and she walked away. Miss Strange said, "Ooh, the new mic. Good shooting, cowboy," and caressed my knee under the table. I listened to Jimmy whacking sounds out of his guitar. I pictured him on stage, head in the air, guitar turned upside down, coaxing out each electronified note with delicate aggression, his left hand moving quickly, powerfully. The guitar screamed. Billy the Kid was on stage with him too, slumped in a folding chair, squinting, daring anyone to rush the stage. Ty Cobb leaned on a speaker and grimaced at the crowd. He spat a stream of tobacco-laced saliva. Julius Caesar lay on a daybed off to the side of the stage. I stood in the front row with Miss Strange, her hair more scraggly than ever, and I offered her the complimentary bowl of peanuts I held in my left hand. Jimmy finished and let his strings vibrate and give off a slow, fading sound, his left hand high in the air, and we all clapped. Caesar stood up on his bed. Billy the Kid smiled. Ty Cobb gave a cool wave. I noticed Mark Twain in the crowd, too, stroking his handlebar mustache. We looked around at one another with approval. Brethren. "I'm sorry. You're going to have to leave," the bar owner said. He was a middle-aged white guy with a mustache, and he pointed at me with his right hand. He didn't know we were outlaws. This story originally appeared in the anthology Kiss the Sky, Fiction and Poetry starring Jimi Hendrix, edited by Richard Peabody and published by Paycock Press. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's story. If you did, please leave a rating and a review. Also, please tell a friend directly. Personal recommendations help a lot. My main goal with this podcast is to grow an audience for future work, and it'd be great to connect with more odd people who like strange art. I'd love to connect on social media. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at TheodoreCarter2 or on Facebook with the handle at ChileanSeaBlog. This story and other stories in this podcast are part of my book, The Life Story of a Chilean Sea Blob and Other Matters of Importance. The book is available wherever books are sold online, and you can find links to all of my books on my website, TheodoreCarter.com. You can also find other things there, like videos of me making a giant cement eyeball or turning traffic boxes into robots. Music from this podcast comes from TMI Management, TMIMGMT.com. Thanks again for being here, and I hope you come again.